Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Eric Zorn writes a newsletter called the Picayune Sentinel. You can subscribe to it if you just email ericzorn@gmail.com. The former Chicago Tribune columnist joins us Tuesdays at this time. And here it is Tuesday at this time. Hi, Eric Zorn. Welcome back.
Hey, John. Nice to talk to you.
I voted today. Did you already vote or did you?
I did. Of course I did. I'm one of those geeks who votes all the time. I vote in every single election. I don't think I've missed one since I became an adult,
I'm not going to ask you who you voted for, but what are your thoughts generally about the election today?
Oh, just take a guess who I voted for. my thoughts are that this is an extremely consequential midterm election. Everyone always says this is the most important election of our lifetimes, and I don't know if that's the case. I still think that the 2020 election is more important than this election, and the 2024 election will be more important than this election. But I think it's a really important day, a really big day to see as we look across the country how well or poorly the election deniers and basically the forces of anti-democracy in the Republican Party, as I see it, fare at the ballot box. And I'm certainly going to be looking at some, one of the things tonight I'm going to be looking at really early on is what happens in some of these key Senate races, right? You have Dr. Oz against John Fetterman in Pennsylvania. You have Tim Ryan against J.D. Vance in Ohio. And you've got Herschel Walker against Raphael Warnock in Atlanta, in Georgia. And I think those three elections, and we'll know those pretty early in the evening, I think. You know, I mean, it's possible that, of course, we will be waiting for days to find out if the elections are close. But it might be that we will know pretty much right away by those results, what kind of night we're in for, what kind of next 2 years we're in for. Because if the Republicans do as well as everybody thinks they might, then you really might see the entire Biden agenda just disappear. Right, he may not be able to get anything done in the next 2 years, and it looks as though former President Trump is going to announce what he said on, I think it's on Monday,
the 15th.
So in a week, he's going to announce probably that he's going to run again.
Sure.
And
I don't know if he's going to do it from Mar-a-Lago, and I don't know if they have an escalator out there. As soon as I saw that he was going to do it from Mar-a-Lago, which is logical, I guess he could do it from one of his hotels or resorts or the tower in New York, but I thought, I wonder how he's going to stage that moment. Walking up to a podium strikes me as simplistic. He's a crowd master, so will he do it in front of an arena of people? I'm not exactly sure how it happens. It'll be interesting to see how he stages it.
It's odd that he was doing it at Mar-a-Lago because he doesn't typically have rallies at Mar-a-Lago.
No.
So you're right, maybe he's going to come in on a jet pack or something like that.
I thought golf cart, but that looks kind of wimpy. Jet pack is ludicrous. The escalator I thought was ludicrous, but look what happened. So maybe there's nothing about Donald Trump that is predictable or is going to compromise his popularity with some people. You said the most consequential election, and I don't think it's an important argument to win. Is this the most important election? Does democracy live or die here? That does sound a little hyperbolic to me, even though I do appreciate the consequences of what's happening. But that would be an interesting list to say in the last 50 years or 225 years, pick them, say, what are the most important elections in U.S. history? And you could say the election of 1800, or you could say the election of 1804. You could say, frankly, the year that Al Gore conceded was, you talk about a transfer of power, the victory of the principle of democracy over personal agendas or feelings. Al Gore's loss was an important election, too.
Yeah, I when I look back on it, it looks to me like the election of Ronald Reagan in 1980 was really a significant turning point for the country. If you look back at that, when we had an incumbent Democrat who got pounded at the polls by Reagan and his approach. Now, of course, Reagan would not be at home in today's Republican Party, I don't believe. I think that Obama's election was extremely important.
Well, sure.
And you look back on the moments where the country could have gone one way or the other, and it went in the direction of Obama. If McCain had been elected, or as you point out, if Gore had successfully fought and won the election in 2000, that would have been. That would have changed a lot. I don't think you would not probably have Barack Obama running. It would have been just, I think, a very different.
Sure, if you play it that way. But I'm just speaking about the principles per se, right? For instance, say Al Gore had fought further, or say the Supreme Court had not done what it did to, you know, ultimately seal George Bush's victory and Gore wins, then Democrats would not have had the moral high ground maybe going down the road saying that at some point you have to accept the results of an election. I'm thinking now about Donald Trump saying that he didn't lose the last one. At some point you have to accept the results and move on. Al Gore did that, even though maybe he could have made the case or the court could have ruled differently. And maybe we would be arguing this last election differently. Does that make any sense?
Yes, no, I agree, although it feels like all the rule books got thrown out and all the precedent got thrown out when Donald Trump was elected president, so that you can't say, well, because people have to pay attention to what happened before, and you look at how Mitch McConnell engineered the appointments on the Supreme Court, where at one point a certain principle held, and then a couple of years later a different principle held, having to do with when you fill vacancies. So I don't know that people feel like they're guided by those histories. And you know, when you look back at George W. Bush, you know, I certainly didn't agree with him on a number of issues, but he was a Republican who, to my mind, colored between the lines. I mean, that he was not someone who was an outrageously radical figure. He was in many ways a moderate, traditional Republican. And so I don't think that necessarily signaled a turning point in American, you know, political culture the way the election of Donald Trump did. And what we're looking at right now is you've got all these Republicans, like 300 of them around the country running for office, denying the results of the 2020 election. And I posted in my newsletter this morning, which is available online and wants to go look at it, Bill Maher's monologue from the other night where he's talking about how this is how autocracies happen. This is how democracies fall, which is when you elect people to power who have no intention of giving it up under any circumstances, who will deny the results of any election that in which they are not winning. And I think Maher makes the case that we are at a major moment where all these election deniers around the country will help us start us into a slide into authoritarianism. And I think that is why this is so important and why it's really going to be important to look at some of these early results and see how the parties are doing. There was talk, of course, as you remember earlier this summer, that the Democrats were going to surge based on the Dobbs decision, the abortion decision by the Supreme Court overturning Roe v. Wade. This was going to energize all kinds of women voters and suburban voters. And, you know, a lot of men are also in favor of abortion rights, but that issue seems to have faded.
Yeah.
And the people are much more worried about the price of gas and crime than they are reproductive rights.
And the timing on that is interesting. You know, I don't know that people that voted for or would vote again for Donald Trump want an authoritarian style government. It's just the cult of Donald Trump. That's my hope, so that he'll come and go. Eventually, we won't have a Donald Trump to vote for, and that there's no value, there's no upside to having an authoritarian type of government. And in fact, the people that are saying make America great again have it in their mind that they're trying to preserve democracy, such as they see it. I guess that's just my trying to be hopeful about how dire this conversation is about saving America and saving democracy. I don't think that the people that want to vote for Donald Trump want an autocracy. They just like Donald Trump.
Well, I think you're right in some ways that the people who like Donald Trump, I think they like him for how he makes people like me so mad.
It's called owning the libs.
Exactly. And if you talk to a lot of Republicans, and I do have Republican friends and people who voted for Trump, not, you know, maybe with a little, with their nose held between thumb and forefinger, they voted for him, and they'll vote for him again, because they don't support the party. But if you give them a choice, do they want a more mainstream Republican or do they want Trump next time? I think, you know, if you ask a lot of people, you're going to find that maybe even a majority of Republicans would really rather have somebody else, and he might not have as easy a ride in the
right
primaries.
All right, so
it's quite possible that he'll announce.
148. Let's pause. I want to ask you about something else, and that has to do with what is taking place out at the Hideout. John, why would you ask him about a little club in Chicago? Eric Zorn publishes a Picayune Sentinel. It's a newsletter that drops today. Do you drop it today, Eric Zorn?
It's online today, yes, and it usually posts on Thursday mornings also, so I'll have an election recap issue on Thursday, and so it's twice a week. The Tuesday issue is mailed out to subscribers who support the institution, and the Thursday one is free to everyone. So I encourage anyone to sign up, take a look at it, and you can read it for free forever if you want to.
Eric Zorn is, of course, a Mincing Rascals podcaster and former Tribune columnist. You wrote recently about the somewhat beloved venue, the Hideout, where our friend Mark Baser regularly does a show, where bands have come and gone over the years. It's a neat, small, classic Chicago joint, and they're not going to be in business now. What's going on?
Well, they're not going to be in business for a couple of months right now. They've closed down. And what happened was in October, a disgruntled ex-employee, Michael DeVille was his name. He was their program manager. He posted a complaint to Instagram complaining about the workplace culture at the Hideout, saying that he felt disrespected and there's a toxic environment, and the implication was that the owners were racist, and he's African-American. They used him to burnish their credentials as a diverse institution when in fact they were just taking advantage of the moment. And it was a very harsh post on Instagram. And what happened, I mean, he made a number of somewhat vague allegations about how he was treated, and a whole bunch of acts and artists bailed out on the Hideout. It's a small little club over there, right by where Lincoln Yards is now going up.
Yeah,
and it's been there, like I said, for about 25 years, and they are a venue that has hosted a lot of small up and coming bands, and it's hosted charity events. You know, full disclosure, my wife's former organization had events there. It's sort of a great community bar/club.
Yeah.
And all of it seems to have gone away now, for at least temporarily, because so many acts decided without, I think, much investigation that DeVille's complaints were valid. And the Hideout responded with a fairly abject apology for him feeling the way he did, and saying that they were open to participating in some sort of restorative justice process to understand his concerns. And they wanted to continue to be a positive, welcoming place in the city. And this was just not good enough for a number of acts that were booked there, including Ben Jaraski, who is the columnist at The Reader, who used to have his monthly First Tuesdays program, podcast recording at the Hideout. He bailed out on him. And I'm just wondering what it was that was so bad about what happened to this guy, and what it was that was so inadequate about the efforts by the management of the Hideout to try to remediate the situation, to find some accommodation that made it that you basically had to close this club down. And it's a small place. They have closed as of yesterday. They're now closed through at least the end of the year. And it seems like it's a pretty good bet that it won't reopen, that the owners may feel like, hey, what are we supposed to do here? How can we restore our reputation?
Well, let me suggest this, and I'll let you respond. Yeah. Is it possible that in this day and age, if you are perceived to be racist or anti-Semitic, any association with you rubs off on me? So I can't risk that. I wonder if all of these acts have fairly judged, or know that they haven't fairly judged the venue, but they can't risk playing there if it turns out that this man's claims are true.
Well, that's exactly the thing. But the thing, you can't, I don't think that you want to administer this kind of social justice on this bar without at least performing some due
diligence. I completely agree with you on that. I mean, and I'm not defending anybody here, but I'm just saying it does not seem to be sufficient evidence for everybody to judge, but the prudent thing is to walk away. Is this cancel culture that we're talking about, Eric?
Well, I think it's a manifestation of it, yes. I think you're looking at someone people who have been accused and have not gotten any kind of hearing, no presumption of innocence, no presumption even of wanting to hear both sides and hearing out. You know, he alleges these incidents that happened at the club, but we don't know. He doesn't name the names of the people who he was involved with. We don't have their side of the story. Again, it's all so vague, and people are running away from this club, and there are consequences to that. These people, this is their club, and they've got employees who work there, and they've got bands that were booked there that aren't going to get to play. So it was a serious act. I think the wait and see is what you ought to do with something like this. So I'd like to hear more. I haven't made a firm judgment, but I certainly wouldn't bail out or accuse the Hideout of horrible conduct that justifies this kind of treatment without hearing a lot more.
Yeah. Eric Zorn writes about that in his Picayune Sentinel. We'll probably talk about it tomorrow on the Mincing Rascals podcast too. You can subscribe to it if you just email Eric Zorn at gmail.com.